Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with me is my co-host Jim.
Hey guys, how's it going?
We are great this weekend. We got lots to go over. There were 11 tournaments we're going to talk about in a rapid-fire rendition of big names in small tournaments. We've got news of one of our favorite models ever to come out. It's going to be on pre-order this coming Saturday. But first, you know, we've been at this for almost 3 years. We're at episode 176 is what you're listening to right now. We want to give a quick shout-out to some friends of ours who are also in the podcasting business. 10 years, man. 10 years to the Preferred Enemies. Congratulations. That's a huge milestone. They're actually one of the first podcasts I ever listened to and inspired me to get into podcasting as well. Kevin's been on our show quite a few times. Want to thank him for coming on board. So, okay, congratulations, guys. 10 years.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a long time.
And it's funny how the game has changed and how podcasting has changed in that amount of time. So that's like, you know, the beginning of fifth edition. It's gone highs, lows, and kind of reacting to that is a pretty big deal. So congratulations, guys. That's really awesome. Also, I owe Kevin Shook, who's one of the co-hosts of that show, a game, which I probably should. He lives in the Phoenix area. I probably should hit him up for that because he came to our tournament and I was TOing and I was the ringer. And all things fell apart. And at one point, he was doing his move. I was like, finish your move and face. I'll be right back. And I had to go plunge a toilet because the maintenance team from the venue was just couldn't figure out, you know, which way it was up. Yeah, it was terrible. It's a horrible game. I felt really bad. So Kevin, I owe you one. So hopefully we'll get you on soon. In the meantime, according to Games Workshop's community page, it appears that one of our coolest models ever, Bellicor, will be available for pre-order this coming Saturday.
I think we get two of them. One with wings and one without.
I didn't even think of him without wings. That'd be pretty cool, actually. There's so much on this guy. It's just so much detail. And, oh my, it's just so cool looking. Can't believe this is going to be on the tables. It's really awesome.
Yeah, I'm really hoping the 40K rules come out. Like, they're not like, yeah, here's the model. But the 40K rules will be in the next Warzone book in 3 months.
Oh, don't do that.
I hope they just released the data sheet maybe on the website.
I would hope so. If at least in the box, but like we said, we've never seen the full rules in the box. Usually just get like stat lines and weapon stats. And he has his own psychic powers, right? He has his own psychic power tree.
Yeah, it's called, I can't remember, but they said it. Yeah. It's something related to shadows.
Noctic, I can feel it.
Noctic, I think. Noctic. Anyways, but okay, yeah. I mean, we've seen some of his rules previews already. His sword is absolutely incredible. His defensive stats are absolutely incredible. The fact that he's a psyker is awesome. I'm just curious how expensive he's going to be, and especially how many wounds he has, because currently he's a demon prince, which means he's untargetable. But based on the size of the model, I can't imagine he's got like anything less than like a greater demon stat line.
I would assume so. Just, yeah, I guess he's no different than a bloodthirster at this point, and just kind of tweak his abilities accordingly.
Yeah, so hopefully I know it doesn't mean this, but hopefully that means we get the demon book this year sometime.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah,
I do think it's interesting though, like I'd imagine that maybe this was originally in a place in the release schedule where we would have that, say, second supplement book, but I think with the fact that they're trying to release AOS 3 in the summer, they're just kind of pumping out the AOS releases because they have to get all the Broken Realms stuff done so that they can release AOS 3 in the summer, whereas the 40K stuff, I think they're a little bit it's less of a priority to push.
It's interesting you bring that up because they also announced that there's these four new box sets for Age of Sigmar. Most of that pretty much useless to 40K players, but the one of note is the Zeech Demon one. So you get like a whole bunch of both pink, blue, brimstone horrors, and the guy on chariot for like rock bottom pricing. So maybe that's their plan. Maybe they're just trying to force things out before it gets, you know, hit that deadline. Who knows?
I mean, it's not the, to be fair though, the Zeech chariots are pretty useless to 40K players too. They're probably more, as useless as any of the AOS models.
Yeah, probably. Who knows? But essentially, yeah, I was talking to our local Games Workshop store owner there, store patron, and I was asking him about, you know, it seems kind of odd that certain things got this, like Curse City, like every piece of online social media was how to paint, how to do this, how to do that, how to assemble. And like the Jakari Codex came out and was like, don't tell anyone. It's like, you know, nothing, you know, it's like, so I wonder if that was like a mistake. Was that something that was missing? And he's like, nah, production wise, they would be, you know, months in advance. He thinks mainly because nobody was at Games Workshop Studios because it was under lockdown. So I don't know. Maybe maybe the product line is on pace. It's the marketing machine behind it is not behind, not really up to speed. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, well, I'd imagine I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I would bet that the majority of the 40K releases for the rest of the year are probably going to be Codex related. Like AOS, you're getting basically one or two new armies a year at this rate, right? They just releasing Vampire Counts or Gravediggers.
Gravediggers. It's a monster truck.
What are they called? Grave Wardens. I don't even know. Whatever. Vampire Counts.
Sunday.
You're getting Vampire Counts. You just got another big Luminous release. Sounds like there's probably going to be at least one or two more big AOS releases. As far as like we're talking like eight to like the Luminous release is huge. This is like there's like 14 kits, right? The Vampire Counts release is huge. So we're not seeing that level of like we saw obviously Necrons and Space Marines actually only got a few new things, right? Didn't get a full, but Necrons obviously got a full revamp, but it's going to be almost a year going into July here, so about 3 months, where we've only had one real new 40K army, right? So I don't know if this Orc Snaga stuff is going to be the new army, but it feels like from an army model perspective, AOS is in ascendance, whereas 40K is mostly rules and books right now, but I'm sure they have something in store. I'm just curious what it is. It seems like it's more splash releases for individual armies, like a unit here, a unit there, than it is like whole new factions or whole new like revamps, you know?
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I keep telling myself something's brewing. I'm not sure what. Going back over some of those, you know, preview, you know, with the extreme close-ups of models and stuff like that. We haven't seen a lot of that stuff come out yet. So maybe like we don't know what that other Orc model was. It's not, you know, the Savage Orc thing. We've seen the Sisters of Battle. We know Adbeck's on the way. I would assume a Sister Battles is right after it because there's already some of the boxes being leaked already with the new stat lines in them. So, but again, most of those have already gotten all their models. So maybe late summer, early fall, you see this gargantuan 40K update of lots of new models. Who knows?
Yeah, then the other thing with the... Like, I guess codex-wise, I'd imagine... Well, Admech we know is next. If we get Sisters next, I think we will, given that, as you mentioned, that we're seeing those new box sets. But also, the biggest thing is, like, if it's just a splash release, we wouldn't get the repackaging, you know? Like, if even though they have announced it, like, obviously we know they're getting the weird chicks in robot suits. And there's a few new units. The new tank, is it Castigator? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
And if it was just, like, a splash release, we wouldn't be seeing the repackaging with new stats. So obviously the stats for the Exorcist, there's new stats for the Exorcist out. It's like it got a little bit of a nerf on defensive stats, but it's a little bit better offensively. And I'm sure you can find that on the internet. I don't think we'll talk about it today, but I guess my point is what that points to is that there is actually a new book coming. It's not just here's a few new units in a supplement, right? Because they wouldn't be doing a repackage if they weren't getting a new book, especially if there's new, if the stats have changed.
Oh, absolutely. And that we've seen already that they're not going to just splash that on the internet. Here's a quick, they may do a point changes, but they're not going to do stat changes on the internet. So
yeah,
there's a book coming.
The only question is like the only other scenario I could see, which is I'm doubtful of, is that in the, I guess let's assume there's another supplement coming out, like the Warzone, whatever.
Rust 2.
Okay, also, I'm confused. What is the Book of Rust part? What does that have anything to do with anything?
So, well, first of all, that's what's weird. It's the such and such campaign, which I can't even remember the name of it. Book 1 is the Book of Rust. So is there a Book 2? Kind of like Vigilus Ablaze, Vigilus Defiant type thing.
Right.
But the Rust part is that Typhus... Card? Yeah, that Typhus is trying to take over this Admech, trying to take over Metallica. And so you've got the Knigets, you've got the Admech trying to defend themselves, and they just threw in the Chikari, who just like to get in the middle of this thing. So what's going to be the second half? You know, does some other faction come to the aid of the other guy who knows? Maybe that's when the demons come in. That's how they splash Bellicor into this, into 40K.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah. And I guess where I was going with this is the only other scenario I could see where maybe there's not actually a new Sisters book coming out after AdMech is if, say, in like the Book of Rust 2 or Warzone, whatever book that released next, it's like, here is your new units for Sisters, and then here are updated rules for existing units. That there is precedent for that. I know they did that with Demons way back when. That's why I believe the Skullcrushers got an extra wound, I think, at one point. Like, well, the Demons have obviously gone through a million updates. Sorry, when the new Beast of Nurgle came out, I think they got an extra wound, and the Fiends of Slaanesh got an extra wound. So those were splash releases in supplements, and we didn't actually get a new codex. They just had updated data sheets. So there is precedent for that. Obvious. And on the flip side, there's also precedent for them releasing, like, look at Lumineth release. They released Lumineth, and then Lumineth, this next Lumineth book, like, almost about a year later. So Sisters actually came out at the tail end of 2019. So it'll be probably about just over a year and a half between books, which is a fairly short refresh. That's like Space Marine levels of refresh, you know?
True. Which I could see them doing. I could see either scenario. Now, the what we've seen in hand with the Book of Rust, there are almost no data sheets. It's mostly relics, warlord traits, stratagems.
That's true.
Yeah. So, but the precedent has been there. You know, when Lord Discordant got released, you know, that was, you know, the whatever the spider demon engine thing is. I can't, the Venom Crawler. There we go. Those were, yeah, that was a full blown data sheets. You hit it right on the head. The demons, I couldn't remember which one was current when I was like, okay, which is the newest one now? They've had so many updates in terms of like Blood Crushers and stuff like that. So,
yeah. The demon book is a total, like the demon faction, sorry, not the book. The book's a mess, but like the fact that there's 17 Keeper Secrets data sheets, there's like four different data sheets for like Skull Crushers. There's like almost every unit has had stat changes or errata's.
Mm-hmm.
Since the book was released, so it needs a serious rewrite. It's just an awful book. So I hope it gets released this year. It'll make me happy.
Me too. And I think that would be a smart business decision because, like you said, AOS is primed for a 3.0, and that's one of the few factions that crosses both 40K and AOS. So you update, you know, you do what you want to do with demons, and then here's the 40K codex to go with it.
Yeah, I think my next purchases for myself, my personal stuff. I am happy to report I've completely finished my 100% of all the Death Guard that I own. And all my Death Guard army is 100% complete at this point. But my next Chaos purchases will probably be a little bit of Slaanesh Demonettes, like a Keeper Secrets and 30 Demonettes, because that's the one aspect of the list that I don't own. I have all other the gods. So anyways, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I'm saying I'm going to start loading up on demon stuff because if they're good in AOS 3 and the demon book comes out, they're going to be out of stock for like 2 years at that rate. So I'm thinking I should start stockpiling demon stuff at this point.
Wouldn't be too far off. So, hey, Jim, if somebody wanted to watch you paint all this, where would they find that?
They can follow me on YouTube and on Twitch. It's Duplicity Paint. Just search that up. Check out my Instagram, JimboV_paints as well. There's a link in my bio. Or you can follow me on Twitter. Basically, anywhere that I'm online, I've been plugging myself. So just find me on the internet, and you'll very quickly figure out how to watch painting streams and that kind of stuff.
So there you go. And I've been following you on Instagram. It is a good. There's lots of good stuff on there. So definitely take the time to check it out.
Yeah. And there's more exciting stuff coming.
Dun, dun, again, dun. That's a tease here. About, yeah. That's what we in the business call a tease.
All right.
So question here, interesting. We talked about demons. We talked about, you know, we saw how the Dark Eldar kind of mixed together their multiple factions.
Yeah.
Do you still see them being Chaos Space Marines and Chaos Demons being two separate factions now they'll never meet again? Or are they going to find a way to mix and mesh them again?
I mean, do you want do you want my realistic answer or my wish list answer?
Both.
So I would love it. My favorite Chaos book of all time is fourth edition Warhammer Fantasy book called Realm of Chaos.
Oh.
And it was a mix of Beastmen, Chaos Warriors, and Demons all in one book. And so I would love, and also the Khorne Demonkin book from 7th edition 40K was amazing as well. So I would be over the moon if they released either a supplement or some way where Chaos Demons and Chaos Space Marines could integrate a lot easier. Especially with the way that, you know, I'm actually filming a battle report this Sunday, and I'm very tempted to just run like a Nurgle themed list where it's like Plague Bearers, Mortarion, and Death Guard, kind of like a mix of all these kinds of like Nurgle demons and Death Guard. And I was like, that would be so cool on the tabletop. Like, why can't we do that? Or like Tzeentch demons and Thousand Suns. Like, that's such a cool thematic way to play the game, and it looks awesome. And it just makes me really sad that doesn't exist, you know? So I would like that. I'm not optimistic.
Right. So for my dream, I was actually thinking about this. Maybe we need to rethink the Chaos faction altogether. And you hit it right in my head. I love that Khorne Demonkin book, which it's funny because many industry insiders said it was a complete disaster. You know, I guess the way it was, the design studio came up with it was kind of a throwaway. And I'm kind of going like, no, it was really cool. What the problem was is you came out with a Khorne one. You never came out with a Tzeentch, Slaanesh, or Nurgle one to add to it. And it was a really cool theme. And I think maybe that's the way to go. Rather than a Chaos Space Marine and a Demon Codex, you come out with a Khorne Codex, a Nurgle Codex. But then, like, you've already come out with Death Guard. Oh,
right.
Opportunity missed. But then I think, okay, let's see how they did Space Marines. And then you have the core book, and then you have these supplements. Maybe that's how you do it. So rather than just the dark mirror of the legions matching up with the chapters of the Space Marines, maybe that's the way, if you're, you know, the World Eaters book would have the demons incorporated in the Word Bearers because they use so much more demons. Whereas these factions that don't use demons that much, yeah, you're going to pay the command points to bring them.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So in my wishlisty fantasy land world that doesn't exist, this is all I'm asking for. And I don't think it's a big ask. So if anyone from Games Workshop is listening, they're hiring for a Games Workshop design studio lead for 40K. So maybe I will go and get that job and manifest my dream. But here, and we look, I don't even want what Space Marines have. Space Marines have way too much stuff, and I've already accepted that they're the poster child of GW. I want a Chaos Space Marine book that's like fairly like that's the non sorry I want a Chaos Space Marine book that has all the non cult legions, so not including World Eaters, not including Emperor's Children. So this would be Alpha Legion, Iron Warriors, Black Legion, Night Lords, and Iron Warriors. Did I say Iron Warriors already? And that would have full supplement rules. So it wouldn't just be like, here's your Legion traits. It would be like, they each have a few pages of stratagems, whatever. And then I would have an Emperor's Children and a World Leaders book with the appropriate cult troops in plastic. We'd have a demon book. And then we'd have one supplement called like Supplement Codex Demonkin, which would have rules on how to build those merged mixed forces with some additional rules on that. So it'd be essentially three books, right? Three main books. And then obviously the cult legions, World Leaders and Emperor's Children. Those would be their own books, just like Death Guard and Thousand Suns are their own books. So that would be like my kind of like utopian chaos society that we live in, to have those books.
It'd be pretty cool. I think that's one thing that was driving me nuts. It's like, you know, the legions are supposed to be on the same footing as the chapters, but somehow, you know, the chapters get their own books and legions don't.
Yeah. Or at the minimum, I think if we say the current Chaos Space Marine book, which contains, like, say we don't get a standalone Emperor's Children and World Leaders book, okay, and we just get Chaos Space Marines again, just like there currently is, then at least I want a supplement that's like supplement Traitor Legions, that has like all of the like has more chapter specific rules for each of those like essentially anything that's not Black Legion gets like a supplement book, or maybe even Black Legion does too. They're in there, right? But it's like, it's essentially like all six Space Marine supplements in one book, but for Chaos. Because does anyone play Space Marines with just the rules from the Space Marine book and not a supplement? No, that's like, it's just not a thing, right?
Right.
So Space Marines are always the Space Marine book plus add in whichever supplement you want, right? So I don't see why Chaos can't have a similar thing where it's like, here's the core Space Marine book, Chaos Space Marine book, and here's your supplement book. And it's almost like two books in one. But at that point, if there's only going to be one supplement book, then you might as well put them all together and give me like a giant book, because Last I checked, the Space Marine book is like 300 pages. So I'm sure they can find some room in the Chaos Space Marine book to fit all the rules for like the various traitor legions and not have to have like a whole separate book.
Right. No, I think they easily something they can do and be cool to see it. Yep. But someday. It's funny you mentioned that Warhammer Fantasy book, because that was the last time I played Warhammer Fantasy. That's my army was exactly that. It was all mixed, and then separate army books came out. I was like, what? Oh, hell with that. Who wants to buy my army? It was a very sad day when that got broken up.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Anyways, it was a busy weekend. You can tell, I guess, the corona is starting to... virus is starting to let up in quite a few areas. There are close to 11 tournaments to talk about this past weekend. There was actually one GT, but we're going to play a quick round robin of big names at small tournaments. So we're going to run through this as fast as we can because there are quite a few interesting bouts. One thing for sure, Chikori Codex showed up. There were more games played with the Chikori Codex this weekend than the last 6 weeks combined. So people are definitely taking the new codex out for a spin. So curious to see how they did.
And they are. I watched a few games on stream today, like in the various events. And it's like I also listened to plug another podcast. Best in Faction is run by Colin Sherman out of the Seattle area. I was listening to their podcast today on Twitch, and just something he said, and it, like it's not just that their rules are so good; they're so cheap. Like you get so many of them. You know, it'd be one thing if like their rules were really strong and like it was slightly like say you got like 15% less than you get, but like the fact that their points are so low means that like you're starting the game with like 20 different units. It's crazy. And so it's kind of this like double whammy of like super cheap and OP rules. Super OP rules plus being very cheap. So I'd imagine they're going to be dominating the meta for the next like until yeah, I don't know. I don't know who's going to come out to stop them, but I hope it's not a big, like if AdMech is just stronger and the next book is stronger, then we're going to be, the game's going to be in a very bad place. So I'm really curious to see what the FAQ does. Cause I'm curious if they're going to nerf some of the like insane witch succubus combos that are doing like 42 attacks or like dark technomancer, two wound strength, four flamers. Where the only downside is if you roll one to hit, you take mortals, but they can't roll into it because they're flamers. So these kinds of things.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what they do with the FAQ on that. But we already have seen quite a few of the data sheets for the AdMech. You know, and it looks quite clear that they're not making a lot of changes to AdMech. So, you know, a little like an extra attack here, an extra AP there. And then, you know, if it's something that was generally D6 damage is now D3 plus 3. But for the most part, we're not seeing huge overhauls in offensive output when it comes to AdMech. So I don't think they're the ones that are going to knock off. But I mean, Chikari always struggle against AdMech, but still, it's I don't see a whole lot of change between AdMech now and post-Codex, unless there's, of course, some crazy chapter rules and stratagem changes there. But nonetheless, let's take a look at our first tournament and see how things all panned out. We're going to Marietta, Georgia for the Warzone Gigabytes 5. And your top five looks something like this. Damian Owens coming in fifth place with Cult Mechanicus. Jamie Paris in fourth place with Space Wolves. Nick Nottavati taking third place with Drukhari. Second place, Alex Putt with... Alexis. With Drukhari in second place. And your winner is Stephen Mitchell with Chaos going a perfect 5-0.
What was he running? Because asks a very curious Chaos player.
So inquiring minds want to know... Starts off with Patrol of a Thousand Suns, featuring Ahriman, a sorcerer in Terminator armor, a unit of five Rubik Marines, and a Chaos Spawn. That's correct, a singular Chaos Spawn. Okay. Then he goes with the Battalion of Nurgle, featuring Epidenus and a Greater Unclean One, as well as a Horticulus Slimux. That's the snail guy, right?
Yeah, that's the guy that has the tree. He can summon a tree, basically.
Okay, that guy's annoying. Three units of three Nurglings, three units of eight Beasts of Nurgle, and a unit of five Furies with the Mark of Nurgle.
How many Beasts of Nurgle?
24 altogether.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That is a lot of just stuff that does not die.
Yes. And correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't the Great Unclean One do something to move them along or make them move faster or something like that?
Well, he can actually, I don't know if he took the relic, but basically there's a way to actually, I think it's called the, let me just pull it up here. There's basically a relic that where like every time you kill a model, you can return one model to like a Nurgle demon unit within like 6 inches or something like that.
Let me tell you what he took then. He has the Bioblade, the Doomsday Bell, Fleshly Abundance, Miasma, Pestilence, and then you upgrade him to an Exalted Greater Unclean One, giving him Revolt and Resiliency.
So he's got the Bell, right? So the Bell, basically what happens is you roll a D6. This is amazing. You roll a D6 for every friendly Nurgle Demon unit within 7 inches. On a 4+, it just gets a model back. Oh, so when you're talking Beast and Urgle, we're talking a T5, 5-wound monster with a D6 attacks, like full rerolls, and that heroically intervenes like characters. So you can imagine that every turn he's getting probably two to three Beast and Urgles, like Beast and Urgles back, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of like, and that's it's not like with one wound, it's at full. So you get, that's five extra T5 wounds with a 5+, 5+. That's a lot to get through.
That's like a ton to get through. Yeah.
What was his troops in that detachment?
Three units of 3 Nurglings.
Yeah.
Which aren't easy to get through either, you know, so.
I think that's the list Nick lost to, right? He lost his one game.
I will double check there. Dun, dun, dun. Nick lost game 4, and yes it is. And give me, so we had Drakari 2nd and 3rd. Let's take a look what those look like. Lexus ran the following patrol detachment. Looks like we ran the triple patrol. So first one's Cabal the Black Heart featuring Drazar, two units of 5 Cabalites with blasters and phantasmal grenade launchers, 2 units of 5 Incubi, 2 units of Ravagers, all with Dark Lances and a Phantasm Grenade Launcher. And then 2 Raiders with Dark Lance, Grizzly Trophies, and Phantasm Grenade Launcher. So he's trying to really go for all those. Basically, Phantasm Grenade Launcher is the Drukhari version of Smite at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of nasty. I watched a game today, and the amount of mortal wounds, especially with like a Grizzly, the trophies on the flyers, and like all the jank, the leadership bombs from Blackheart, I think, is -1 leadership, and then also the Grizzly Trophies on the vehicles. It's like you stack like -4 leadership, and then you just pump in Phantasms. Yep. And it's like a lot of mortal wounds.
So here comes the second part of that, is the Homunculus part. He took Dark Creed. You're going to see a lot more of this, and not that Prophets of Flesh is bad. It's just, here's why. You take Fear Incarnate, and so basically all those leadership things that Jim just mentioned, if I beat your leadership on a 3d6, you do not count as objective secured and you fail all actions immediately. And then he adds to it 10 of the upgraded racks, which are Hemoxites, I think that's how you pronounce that.
Who knows?
Anyway, he's got a unit of 10, 2 of them with ossifactors, and 2 Venoms, again, with Chain Snares and Grizzly Trophies. So every one of his vehicles is extending a -2 leadership buff to all your opponents. And last but not least, he adds Cult of Strife, and he adds a Succubus. Interesting enough, he took random combat drugs, so he gets 2 rolls. But this is pretty much the pretty close to what the internet's talking about here. Dark Lotus Toxin, which increases the damage, I believe, of the weapon. Precision Blows, that means every time he rolls a 6 to wound, he inflicts mortal wounds equal to the damage of the weapon. Not just one, but whatever the damage of the weapon is. And then, of course, he took a Chardonnay and an Impaler. So that means every time he rolls a 6, he's inflicting 2+ the toxin, 3 mortal wounds in addition to any other damage. And, of course, he took a Stratagem, which gives him an extra Warlord trait. So what did he take on that? He didn't write down what Warlord trait he took on that. Interesting. So that's your one of the two. The other one you hear a lot about, which we'll see later in the show, is the Razor Flail version, which means you double your number of attacks.
That's just gross, man.
Which is gross. And then the last one, which is the one I snoozed on, is the Trip Witch whip. It's a relic whip. It's good against troops because it's a poison weapon, but it wounds any non-vehicle on 2s. I believe it's AP minus 3. Don't quote me on that, but it is damage 2, which is an upgrade from the previous codex. So you mix that with precision blows and all the other stuff, and it just gets nasty really fast.
Yeah, the combo stacking in Dark Eldar is a little bit outrageous, and I'm going to take 2 seconds to complain about something, which is if you look at like the whole, you know, we were talking about Cult of Book of Rest earlier, the fact that they've basically named an entire basically sub-faction thing book about like Typhus, yet he got literally the worst rules in that entire supplement with the most restrictions. Like the Cult of Strife rules and the other army rules in those books, they're literally just like, here's extra rules for free with no downsides, whereas the Terminus S rules are like super, super restrictive and like just not as good. And it's kind of, it's really disappointing to see that like the Armies of Renown versus this, the kind of Codex supplements is really disappointing to see. So hopefully that's not a sign of things to come, because it kind of feels like two different people wrote the rules for those books.
Yeah, the Abnec thing too was pretty nasty with the... So darn, you can't take any Starry, but everything else gets minus 1 damage. I was like, ooh, that's not too restrictive, but oh well. Anyway, back to the list here. So we mentioned the Crazy Succubus here. We also have a unit of Blood Brides. Looks like a full unit of 10, featuring all the toys, the Hydrogluttons, Razor Flails, and Chardonnet. A unit of 15 Hellions, and a unit of 9... Yes, 9 Reaver bikes, 3 of them with Heat Lances, all of them with grab talent, and 3 grab talents as well. And everywhere he had an opportunity, they went with random, so rolling 2 combat drugs. So
it's worth it. I mean, they're so good.
So this is a pretty textbook list. You're going to see this a lot over and over and over again. So it just covers a lot of strengths. And like Jim, you said, that stuff is now priced to move. So you can fit a lot of that in there.
Yeah, and like I was like the problem with the Dark Elder as they are right now is that like nothing is bad. There's like very few bad options, and they're so cheap that like the fact that a 60 point succubus can do like something like 40 attacks, it means you're trading up really well. Right. And 40k right now, 8th edition especially, it's a game of trades. And I feel like Dark Eldar, with just the amount of units they have, the amount of damage output, they just trade up so well in the meta right now. So I'd imagine that they're going to be dominating the tournament scene for quite some time. But good on the guy that won with Chaos. It makes me happy.
So I would also say, though, remember that that same Succubus is still T3 with only 5 wounds. So they think they're squishy.
Don't defend her. You defend her, Ray. Okay. I dare you.
I will. Dismissing the top 5, by the way, Mark Perry with Chaos, also coming in 6th place.
Oh, my boy.
Yeah, 3-2. And Thomas Burr, there it is, coming in 13th place with Ultramarines. You may remember him from Pro Tabletop.
Yeah, I do.
Our next event, we bring ourselves to the Woodhaven Charity Invitational. So this is in Virginia, I believe. Yes. And the top 5. Filled again, once again, with some top players. Stephen Henry IV, who made a big splash on the ITC top 10 last show, we were on, was playing Custodes. He came in 2nd. And Shane Watts coming in 4th with Adeptus Sororitas. So sisters still got some teeth there, still fighting it out. Next event brings us to Holton, Kansas. Actually, no, I skipped over one. Sorry, we skipped over Winter Park, Florida. And here we go, lads. It's a special event where everybody had to play orcs. No, not the case at all.
That would be amazing, though. And everyone has to talk like an orc?
Oh, that'd be awesome. All the screaming and yelling. That'd be awesome. Coming in 4th place with Jeff Beery with Drukhari, one of the Brohammer guys. So interesting, even Brohammer's now venturing into the Drukhari world there. So curious to see that. Now we make our way to Holton, Kansas, FCGC April RTT, which is really easy for me to say. And yeah, and then not a lot of notable players at the top, but maybe this is just me wishlisting, but the Wooden Spoon winner of this particular event is none other than Randall Cunningham. So I don't know if this is the former Philadelphia Eagles quarterback, and but a guy can dream. And so, and I think it's ironic, a player who defined the mobile quarterback of the future back in the 80s is playing Necrons, but he did go 0-3.
Is it bad that I have no idea who that is? Or the, like, should I?
Yeah, you should.
Okay. Should I feel bad now?
Yeah, he is the originator of the mobile quarterback position.
The amount of football players I can name, it's probably less than 10.
Well, there you go. So, but he was definitely a innovator back in the day. So it's just interesting. But that was a little bit of humor there that went over.
And like four of them are Mannings. So,
all right, now we're making our way to Westminster, Maryland for the Tables and Towers, April RTT. I love these names. Talk about this guy a lot and mispronouncing his name. Another episode where we'll do the same again. But Mate Cesar came in third. Interesting enough, he's playing Drukhari. That was a bit of a change from what his previous lists were. But Necrons actually won that event with Stephen Christopher taking the top spot. Anthony Birdsong coming in 12th place with Orcs. So from Team Glasshammer.
I just want to give a shout out to Anthony. Tables and Towers is actually his shop. I actually was talking to him 2 days ago on the phone. So if you are at Tables and Towers and you see a purple and yellow Chaos Army in the display case, it is one that I've painted. So make sure to check it out, and you'll know that that's an army that I painted. And I just actually did a commission Archeon for that army that I sent off to Anthony a few weeks ago. So that is, but yeah, he opened that shop, and it's a gorgeous shop, guys. I saw lots of videos for it when they did their last GT, and it looks like a great, great store. Awesome. Like, so anyways.
I've been to Westminster, Maryland, and it's a great place.
Shameless plug for my friend's store.
Absolutely. So I did not realize that was your store, but it's a great area. Definitely a big gaming community. So that's perfect location. Awesome.
Yeah.
Our next event is the Fabricators Forge April event in Coraopolis, Pennsylvania.
Say that again?
Coraopolis. Coraopolis. I think it's in the Pittsburgh area. I've not had a chance to look this up. I'm sure we'll be told if we're wrong on chat, but hey, that's what they're there for. So this was our second GT of the weekend. Top five looks something like this. Joseph Clark with Black Templars comes in fifth. Steve Bados with Orcs comes in fourth. TJ Lanigan, name we'll have to remember, there'll be a quiz on him later in the show, comes in third with Chaos. Second place, Anthony Vanilla with Drukhari. And the only player to win an event this weekend with Drukhari would be Nick DeVoe. So interesting list here. Once again, we start with Dark Creed, Umbrella Patrol, featuring Jazar. Three units of five racks, all with rack blades and electrocorrosive whips on their sergeants. And a single Venom with Grizzly Trophies and Splinter Cannon and Twin Splinter Rifle. Second is a Cabal of the Blackheart Patrol, featuring an Archon. Unit of Trueborn with the special you'll see a lot, two blasters, one Dark Lance, and two units of five Cabalite Warriors, all with Phantasm Grenade Launchers. Five Incubi, five Mandrakes, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Raiders. Last but not least, Cult of Strife.
A lot of Raiders.
Yeah.
Don't they hold like 11 models each now?
Yes, that's the big change. So now you can put your regular squads in plus the character. It just opens up so much. The only nerf that really saw, though, they used to have Screaming Jets, which meant you, for every vehicle you put in reserve, it only cost you one CP. Yeah. So it was like a transport. Like I put like Drazar and like two other units in the transport. It was only one CP. They nerfed it to once per game. So I was like, oh.
Oh, so you can only put one vehicle in reserve now.
Yeah. They do have a new stratagem, though. If you're within 6 inches of your table edge, or might be 9 inches, I have to look it up, you can move that unit into reserve in mid-game. So I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. I've yet to find a use for it, but it seems neat.
It's been nice.
Yep. Anyway, Cult of Strife Patrol, 2 succubi. You'll love this one. Adrenalite, so +1 attack on the charge. Tripwitch whip, so that is +3 attacks. And that's the Warlord, so they're probably going to give, doesn't say which Warlord trait, but I wouldn't be surprised, be Blood Dancer to create exploding sixes. Second Succubus has Competitive Edge, Dark Lotus Toxin, Razor Flails, and of course, a additional Warlord trait. So that's probably the most competitive one. That's the one everybody's like, they're going to FAQ that, right? So Competitive Edge is the one, so she's going to come in, 6 attacks base, Razor Flails gives her 12 attacks. So they're probably going to hit on 10, probably wound 5 of those. So that means you left 7 dice on the table that didn't do anything. With competitive edge, you're going to pick up those 7 dice and start over. 7 new attacks. It's just disgusting.
Yeah. Basically, anytime you fail, either hit a wound, anytime an attack doesn't do damage, whether it's because you failed the roll or they saved it, you get to attack again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know I don't know at what point as the person was writing that rule, anyone ever thought that something like that was a good idea. On a witch. Like, okay, if you want to give it to, say, like, a 4-attack character, okay, cool. But, like, the fact that you can get up to, like, 12 attacks to start, damage to, like, AP 2, like, for 60 points, it's like, what were people smoking when they were like, yeah, this is fine, no problem, guys.
No problem. And then when you add the Dark Lotus, so yeah, that's where you start increasing the damage. Oh, it's incredible. So, yeah. So you prepare to be teched for that.
It's incredible. Like, Yanari were incredible.
Yeah. Choices. You got a unit 10 Blood Brides, and then 2 units of 10 Witches, followed by a unit of 5 Hellions. So there you go. Do you want TJ Lanigan's Chaos List, since you're curious?
No, I watched the game. Actually, he was in the final with the Dark Elder, so I know exactly what he played. It's a good list.
All right, so that's the Fabricator. We're going to move to Paragon Game City. This is in Draper, Utah, and surprise, surprise, if there's a game in Utah, we can expect Rich Kilton to be arriving with his orcs, and he did not.
I was going to say, he's the orc legend, legendary orc war boss, right?
That's correct. He came in 3rd for that particular event, so congratulations, Rich. Interesting game here. We're going out to Pasadena, California for the Couch Crusher ITC in Pasadena, California, and a familiar face to many of our listeners here. Alan Hernandez with Harlequins ended up taking the first spot, as well as Jeff Poole, his co-host, Jeff Dirty Poole, with Drukhari. So interesting, he left his chaos at home and jumped on the Drukhari bandwagon. I thought that was interesting. William Saunders came in 2nd with Salamanders. And the entire crew of TFG Radio showed up for the event and went a combined 2 and 7.
Six dozen guys.
So Salty John wasn't salty before. Wait till after this. So this should be good radio. More fun in California. I could have swore they were on lockdown. They had 3 events this weekend. In Temecula, California, you have the SCGC April RTT, another one easy for you to pronounce.
Jesus, guys. Let's a little lighten up on the abbreviations, please.
Yeah, what makes it worse is, guess who won, is the last name I struggle with every week. Junior Aflehi with Blood Angels ended up winning the event.
Congratulations, Junior. Such a nice guy.
Is he?
Every time I've played him, it's been really fun. So
I've never played him yet. So I have. And Cooper Wardell, named from Legends of Past, came in 7th with Adeptus Aurantis. And last but not least, Comic Quest 40K GT. This seems to be a pod event. So I think they're doing one of these where they play like multiple RTTs and take the winners and merge them into a GT type thing. So this is in Lake Forest, California. Friend of the show, James Carmona, came in 8th with his Chaos Space Marines. So I thought he was in Boston, so I didn't know what he was doing in California, but nice to see him back on the West Coast.
It actually does bring up maybe a topic for a future show, but one thing that I was thinking would be worth kind of maybe diving into is, I know there's been lots of talk around like ELO systems. It's ELO, it's not ELO. I know a lot of people say ELO, but it's actually ELO. ELO actually doesn't stand for anything. ELO is named after, it's called an ELO system because it's named after the guy that invented it. But one of the things I was thinking with like moving 40K to an ELO system, and it's probably a topic for a whole episode, but what it does is, it, especially with the pandemic, it's something that I've been thinking about a lot, which is, it means that you don't need giant events, right? You don't like the value of an event is not in the size, but it's in the attendees. And so, you know, given that, you know, a lot of places are not able to do big events and probably won't be for probably at least a year and a half, I think there's some value there. And, you know, you could do a lot of smaller events and essentially still get like a great ranking, I guess, in the ITC or whatever, because if the caliber of the players are good and you're beating players better than you, you're going to move up that ladder. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we've got a couple of minutes left in the show, so let's talk about it now, because I have a strong opinion. And it's very conflicted on this as well. So
okay. Here we go. Hot takes. Love it.
Hot takes. So,
I don't want to interrupt the show flow. Yeah, it was just a thought I had.
The flow is perfect. First time to bring this up, because I, as a TO, I agree with it. Why should the quality of my event be equal to the number of attendees? And it used to frustrate me that there was an event that had like 68 players, and we'd read off the top five. We could read up the top 20. Two of those players were notable in the ITC. And for most of those guys, it's probably the only GT they went to in their entire time. Whereas that year when I ran Scorched Earth Open, we had 16 of the top 25 ITC players in attendance. It was a murderer's row. Battle Salvation in New York is a similar event. So shouldn't those events count more than beating up, than the Baby Slug Seal convention? But then you brought up a great point three episodes ago. What's in it for you to play a slug like me in an ELO system? Excuse me, pronouncing
it wrong.
Because all that can happen is you get a basic win and you maintain your points. Whereas if I win, I'm going to shoot up the ladder because I beat the defending Adepticon champion. See what I did there?
Right. Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure that out. It worked great for my Blood Bowl league because the top players played each other. And then the guys who came in late in the league who were learning the game played each other. And so if somebody was stupid enough, like, I'm going to play Dan. I'm like, don't play. And he played Dan. And even though he lost, it was a close enough game where he built up enough points and it got him, into the rankings.
Right.
But yeah, it becomes this, you can run a 24 person event and somehow I can invite. See, here's my dream. I'll get to them.
Let's hear it.
All right. So there's this terrible movie my wife and daughter have maybe seen 1,000 times. It's called Pitch Perfect 2.
I haven't seen any of the Pitch Perfects, but I know they're terrible. So I gotcha.
So there's a scene where David Cross plays an eccentric millionaire, and he wants to host the greatest a cappella tournament ever known. And he invites all these
tournaments. That's a thing.
Yeah, there are apparently. And he has it in the basement of this mansion, and he gives away $45,000 gift certificate to Dave and Buster's. That's the grand prize. And he has everything from the lead characters from the previous movie, and the Green Bay Packers, and all these other crazy acapella.
This sounds terrible.
So the idea is, when I win the lottery, and I have nothing to do with the last $30 million that I don't know how to spend, I would put on, there's going to be four tournaments a year, and I will invite only the top players and create this circuit. You need to be in the top 50 in the ITC to even be considered for this event. And it will only be 16 players at that tournament, but it's going to be kicking awesome tables, referees at every other table, streaming up the wazoo, table service, drinks. It's going to be the ultimate, but you got to be, it's only going to be the upper echelon of the league.
Right.
How do I do that? Without, and then make it worth their while. So it's like, if you show up, you come in 16th place, you probably will win enough prize money to win, pay off your hotel room type thing.
Right. So, first of all, if you get rich enough to do something like that, you have to have it on a secret Warhammer Island. It can't be on the mainland. So that's just the first thing I got to say. Like, if you're going to do a secret invite only event, it's got to be on an island somewhere, maybe international waters. Maybe like somewhere where like you have to arrive by like a float plane or something equally evil. So that's just the first point I want to make. Second, as I think about it, and this is very raw thoughts, I think there's a way to kind of have your cake and eat it too, which is I think even within an LO system, I think you still need some sort of like division system. And that's kind of where when you were talking about pods earlier, I know one thing that California, their 40K league, there's like different pods and then you kind of move up and down through these pods. And so what you could do with an ELO system is have it so that, you need a certain amount of minimum games or a certain amount of minimum activity. You need to be active. You can't just you can't just get to the top and then sit on it. There needs to be some sort of like incentive to keep players active in the system. Otherwise, just like, as you mentioned, they're just not going to go to events. Like once I get to the top, I'm not going to play anyone because it's only going to result in me losing points, right? If I lose. So second, that's one thing. And then second, you could still have large events, right? But then maybe at an event, players are actually sorted by their ELO ranking or something along those lines, where you almost have like multiple divisions within a single event, right? Where it's like, say an event like LVO, or even look at the way Nova does it, right? Like your first three games kind of splits everyone. But what if it was like that right out of the gates? Like you play, like if you're a low Elo score. You play with kind of people along, and then maybe you get to the top of that division, and then you kind of get bumped up to the next one. So there's always an incentive to either keep playing, or show up to an event, because there'll always be like a division for you specifically, right? The thing is, though, my biggest problem with the way that the ITC scoring is done in general is, A, it's getting harder and harder to, obviously, with, I think COVID showed us that like larger events are very vulnerable to other like disruption. And second, it sucks for TOs that are maybe wanting to run mid-level GTs, mid-level events, because it's this like arms race as like measuring contest of like who can run the biggest events. And I don't think that a quality event should be dictated by the size, right? And so nowadays you get a lot of these shenanigans where people are like, oh, I'm going to put fake players in my event. I'm going to the train's not going to be good because I want to have more tables, which means less train per table. So my train's going to be kind of shit. So there's all these effects of very large events, which is outside of a very few good event organizers, for the mid-level TO who's trying to do an event, when they try to grow the attendance to an event, oftentimes that always comes with a lot of pain, and it's not always done very like gracefully, I guess. And so ideally, this whatever system that we do end up with, it's not this like arms race of like who can just have the most people, which is kind of what it feels like right now. And then it disincentivizes, like right now players are already disincentivized to go to events if they're not big enough, right? So it's like you're just replacing one problem with another, right? So anyways, I mean, as I said, I think we could probably talk about it for at length. Maybe we should have a separate podcast together, Eric, where we could talk about the system, because it sounds like you got some ideas.
I do. And it's you hit right on the head, especially as one of those guys who's running a mid-level tournament. I definitely fall in that realm. Is to get to the upper level, how do I get people to travel to my location? Because the top players aren't going to go to anything less than a GT. It makes sense just for travel expenses. I get that. And that's even if you're driving from Los Angeles to Phoenix. It's about a 5-hour drive. It's not hard. But to do it for an RGT is a waste of time.
Right.
On the second point, in order to, as a TO, when you get to that size, you need to be able to generate enough ticket sales to know that it will definitely be a GT if everybody comes. And I've been burned a few times where like, oh, I got 5 guys coming. Oh, the car breaks down. That's 5 players. Mm-hmm. Gone. Uh-oh. Multiply that 2 or 3 times, all of a sudden your GT becomes an RTT. And they really have been cracking down on falsification, ringer nonsense. And that's good for the game. But yeah, it stinks for the other guys who made it from cross-state. Oh, sorry, we only have 26 players. It's not a GT. We'll be here for 2 days for no apparent reason.
Well, that's I think where the LO system is valuable, because these kinds of problems kind of go away. I don't think there's a perfect solution, but I definitely think people dismiss it faster than it should. And anyone that says it's overcomplicated, I think it needs to go sit down in a corner, because once the actual like system is set up, as far as the back end, it's actually probably just as easy as the ITC to administer, you know.
I was to say, I suggested something similar to this about 3-4 years ago, and I got laughed out of the room. So
yeah, it's not like you're sitting there with an abacus trying to calculate everyone's score per game, right? Like there'll be software, there'll be templates, programs, whatever, where you can basically put everyone's starting score, and then within that tournament, it'll recalculate based on various things. So, anyways, I think it's a good topic. So
yeah, just to add on to that, we can say this for the other discussion, but there is actually a variation to the Swiss pairing system that incorporates that. So you could actually use best ghost pairings to do that. You would not have to change anything.
Revolution.
Yeah. So it's already there. And I've suggested it a bunch of times, and people just looked at me like, you're high. No way. And I'm like, okay, well. So hope you have fun. Cause the hardest part is to grow your community, to grow your event, is the top 10% are going to win the event, but the middle 64% are there to have a good time. Getting smashed by the top player in the world isn't fun. it's kind of like, woohoo, I met Mike Tyson. What'd he do? He punched me in the face. Oh, well, sorry to hear that, dude. It's not saying that top players can't be fun to play with. It's still a bad experience. We're like, oh God, I got crushed. Oh, well, it'd be a lot better. That's one thing Nova does a great job with their system, is that day one, even it's, you know, you did your best, but that was qualifying. Day two, I know I'm going to get three games against people who are at my skill level, and I have a chance of winning a prize being best in pod. I think I forgot they have the names for it. And that's pretty cool. Now, for the top players, I think it kind of stinks for them because nothing's worse than I went 3-0, but I play an army, doesn't score enough points, so I end up being in pod two. So there's no way I can leapfrog the eight players ahead of me to win the championship, even if I go 6-0 for the weekend. That's
yeah, I guess at the end of the day, I think there is an answer out there that is probably can check all those boxes. And I just think we need to maybe look at it because – I don't know. I kind of feel like there's lots of opportunity in the current system, but
right.
And I guess, yeah, just my last final thought. Me personally, I've never, like, even when I was like top of the ITC, I still went to RTTs and small events, even though I knew that they'd have no points. I get no points for them because I already maxed out my GTs and majors. So this like idea that good players just won't play, I think it's a bit of a false, like it's not really based in any sort of like actual evidence. It's just like a weird fear, but like it hasn't actually, like, you know what I mean, like it's kind of one of those like, well, what if this, it's a what if scenario, but like I actually don't think most top players who love the game and are really enjoy playing are gonna just sit out a whole half season because they don't want to lose games, you know what I'm saying? Like I think it's like a made-up problem, you know what I'm saying?
No, it's a great point. I didn't think of it that way. You're right. So anyway, lot more to talk about. What do you guys think about that? We've posted a link on our Facebook page for this episode, letting you guys know we're recording. Give us a shout on there. Let us know how we think. Also, check us out on Instagram on Exterminatus Podcast. So we have a new Instagram. You can see me fumble about with paintbrushes right now. It's kind of fun. And speaking of upcoming events, we talked a little bit about watching the new Drakari. I'll be taking my new Drakari in our team event. I am scheduled for this Sunday. It'll be 2:30 Pacific time. So that'll be 10 o'clock Eastern time for those of you in the United States. I don't have my abacus with me to tell you for our listeners in Great Britain. But apparently we're very popular in Nottingham, according to our download results. So thank you, guys. Appreciate that. So, yes, you get to see me on stream, make a fool of myself. I cannot wait.
When is that game?
Sunday.
Nice. And if anyone is interested in watching me play a game, which you may or may not be,
might be more,
I will be streaming. our Team Canada got paired against another English team in the Greek Hammer event. It's the final round. So we are 3-1, 3-0-1, I think. So I think if we win this round against the English, we could finish as high as third out of 34 teams or something like that, or maybe even first if the teams ahead of us tie. Like it's there's a lot of various scenarios, but we could basically finish as high as second. So I'm going to be streaming that game. It's obviously Tabletop Simulator, not a real game. So if you're into that, as I mentioned, check out the stream, Duplicity Paint, on YouTube and Twitch. But I'm gonna be streaming that Saturday morning at 9 a.m Pacific is when the game starts, so feel free to check it out and hang out.
Very cool. So let's talk about our ITC top 10. As I mentioned, there will be a quiz later in the show. Now we talked about all those top players. Where did they fall? Let's find out. There's been a lot of shakeup here in the ITC top 10. Boy, I cannot talk today. I apologize. Number 10, Nicholas Wanker. That's an unfortunate last name with Nicholas, but you're still in 10th place with 597 points. 9th place, Rob Triplett, also a mere 10th of a point ahead of Nicholas. Patrick Wiley in 8th place. Evan Tomchin in 7th, Sean Rodriguez comes in 6th, Stephen Henry IV in 5th place, Jeremiah Pettit in 4th, Mate Cesar with his big win over the weekend stays in 3rd place, Ryan Snyder, he finished 9th at the Fabricator Forge in Coronopolis, Pennsylvania, still trying to figure out where that is. He remains in 2nd place, but he's got a long ways to go. He is almost 200 points behind your leader. Number one, TJ Lanigan with 1,006 points to lead the land. He has 6 events under his belt already. So it's on. ITC season is officially in bloom. The heck with COVID-19. We're going to play.
Yeah, I mean, go TJ. But it's so early. And like, I feel like the season's just getting started here. So
it's going to be interesting to see as this goes down. It's kind of my fantasy season is actually officially ended tonight with the last puck drop just finished. They kept saying that it'll balance out because certain teams will have missed a couple games beginning of the year because of COVID. They'll get extra games towards the end. Yeah, that didn't happen. So I'll be curious to see as COVID lifts, there'll be more events towards the end of the season. I think a lot of TOs are trying to take advantage of the heightened demand for events. I know I'm under a lot of pressure to run a GT in the fall.
And
So I'd be curious to see. There's going to be a lot of, you know, how busy will it be in the last 4 months of the year and how much the ITC top 10 will shift around.
I think, to be honest, I don't even think like what we've seen so far is like even like the Sony events are either in holding patterns or have already been pushed to the second half of the year that have already been like and confirmed. I kind of feel like, let's say after July, it's like, I think the season starts in July. Like this first half is just, it's just like a moose boosh of the season. And it's kind of mostly meaningless.
I think you're probably right. This is kind of like preseason almost. And then the earnest will be, the title will be determined in the last 4 months.
And so then obviously LVO is going to be massive this year. I think it's going to come back stronger than ever. Cause I'm like so excited, even though I'm going to suck when I go.
It's interesting. You mentioned that. FLG is pushing their other big events, the Atlantic City Open. Tickets just went on sale for that. It's a June event in Atlantic City. That's New Jersey, not Georgia. And I'd be curious.
Full admission that I didn't realize that there was Atlanta. I thought there was a city of Atlanta, which is correct, in Georgia, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, and I didn't realize Atlantic City was a different city until someone said that. It's actually a city in New York. So
you might also want to look at, if you're looking
I'm forgiven that I'm Canadian, so I'm allowed to make a mistake. But if you're from America and didn't know that, then shame on you.
Right. But if you're looking for flights, and like Jim said, there's no flights to Atlantic City. Yeah, that's because the airport's the size of a thumbnail. Look at Philadelphia, you're about 2 hours drive to Atlantic City.
So. But it is sold out as of today.
Is it? Okay.
Totally sold out. So, I mean, I'm sure you can show up and just play, but...
There could be a chance, but that's awesome. That's good news for FLG. That's good to hear.
The 40K side anyways, if you want to play Kill Team, I think.
Yeah. Okay. We'll just move on that. I honestly find it easier to play 1,000 points of 40K than it is to play a game of Kill Team. I don't know. It's weird, but...
I've never played Kill Team in my life, and I don't plan to.
No. So, anyway, that... wraps it up for this week. As I mentioned, Jim will be throughout the internet. Jeff, check him out at Duplicity Paints, as well as on Instagram on Jimbo Paints. As I mentioned, probably by the time you hear our next recording, I would have gotten myself raffle stomped by White Scars. But you can watch that live, and I will be posting that stream. At the very least, definitely check in to check out what the Jakari look like, what my army looks like, but also help us out, because that will be our new streaming service for all our future events here in the Arizona area. So we have a lot of top players on that particular group. Love to push that through. And of course, next week we'll have a lot more events to talk about. So in the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Jim.
And thank you for listening.
I was here.
Ray made it.
And Ray kind of quiet in the background there, but he's here.
Yes. He is the Vindicare assassin of the show. Sit in at the end.
he's calling from inside the house.
Anyway, we'll talk to you guys next week. And congratulations once again to Preferred Enemies for 10 years of recording. Talk to you guys next week.